It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're up against a break there to the previous caller who chumped Chris Illich for putting Hockey Town on the center ice at Little Caesars Arena. Important to remember that was a fan vote. The fans voted to bring it back. Now, maybe he doesn't think it ever should have been voted on in the first place, but the fans did vote to bring it back. That's one. Two is he did have a great line. I do like at the beginning of that call, he said something I've never heard before, but I like. Have you ever heard the phrase, success leaves clues?
I have not.
I have not. I don't know if that meant.
Wonder if that comes from anybody.
Playing more in the preseason or not, but I did like the preamble to it.
Yeah, success leaves clues. Who said that? Who should we give credit? Because I want it to be some great philosopher. You know, Aristotle once said success leaves clues. Something, but I don't know where that came from. But I like that line. 248-539-9797. Let's get back to your phone calls. We got a Dale next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think the season is going to be a bust, and I blame the GM's ego on this. He refuses to get the players needed to make the team better. He did nothing for the rushing, the defensive rush. He did nothing for the interior linemen. We got two rookies and a center who can't play anymore. And we got a double-team Hutchinson. And Davenport, his savior, didn't even show up for the game yesterday. I mean, we could be 0-5 very easily if we don't win next week.
Look, that was if they play like that all year, then yeah, this is going to be a terrible season. I don't suspect that they will. Under Dan Campbell, they haven't lost back-to-back games in a long time. They played a game like this a couple of years ago at Baltimore and got smoked and ended up in the NFC title game. They did add players. You just don't like the players they added, or you think they should have gone with some veterans.
Yeah, the first two draft picks were spent on the interior of the offensive and defensive line.
Yeah, and so I don't know that's
going to help us this year, though.
Well, it could.
I hope it does. They did draft a rookie to play right guard.
They're not going to be very good.
Well, I guess I'm not giving up on them this season.
And Glasgow, I don't think, is physically capable of being a good NFL player anymore.
That might be the case, in which case they'll have to address it. How do they address it? They may address it in-house by moving Ratledge back to center. But look, after one game, you know, I think it's fair to allow them a chance to correct this thing and get it turned around. I mean, there's nothing about yesterday's game that instilled confidence, but it is one game. It is one game, and there have been some smart people in charge of this organization, in my opinion, that will have a chance to correct some of that stuff. But, hey, man, if you wanted more and are convinced that these, you know, these changes that they made are going to fail, then I understand your feelings. I guess I have faith in Hank Fraley. We'll see about the defensive line if they get that going. But you know what concerned me more than any of that? I did not love the performance from the secondary yesterday. Now, Jordan Love had time. He did have time. I still had some concerns about how wide open some guys were running. Didn't love that.
There should be a lot of concerns about that. I was very concerned. You converted. I mean, that first drive, they converted a 3rd and 10 to Wicks. That was on Terry and Arnold. They completed on 3rd and 6 to Golden. There was no pressure at all. Brian Branch had penalties in the game.
The one throwing the helmet.
Really dumb. Really, really dumb. Yep. And I mean, it happened throughout the first half. They made big mistakes. The second half, the Lions gave up, I think, a total of 93 yards in the second half. The defense was much, much better and without a pass rush. They still didn't get a pass rush. They never got home. No quarterback sacks. They didn't create turnovers. The one turnover they thought they had, and that was kind of a turning point, right? Or could have been looked at as a turning point. They had what should have been an interception, but was called back because of a defensive holding call on a receiver that, had he just been beat, it still would have been an interception because he wasn't going to throw there, because they actually did have a little bit of pressure on that play. What sucked doubly about that was that not only does Branch not get the interception because of the holding call, but then Branch takes off and ends up scoring at what would be a touchdown that, had they allowed it to be an interception, that would have been called back because of a penalty on Aiden Hutchinson for hitting Jordan Love and blocking him out of the way, because there's a rule in the rule book that says you can't hit quarterbacks on turnovers or something like that. Even though, if you watch the play, Jordan Love starts running towards where Branch is going to end up, and he's trying to get into the play. I would imagine that, you know, once you start doing something like that, that you should be fair game. And it's not like Hutch hit him viciously. He pushed him, and he went into an offensive lineman, whatever.
I hate the rule, because if the quarterback is chasing after the play,
he's part of it.
You should be allowed to block him.
Yeah.
And the reason he got flagged, according to Gene Steratore, was that he was not near the ball. And I'm like, okay, then don't try. If he's going to run, and Hutch isn't responsible for knowing exactly where the ball is, if you're looking to block, you should be looking at who you're going to block,
And that's in the second half of a game when you're struggling to get back into it, and unfortunately, it ends up nowhere, and it's part of the secondary.
For the most part, it's irrelevant. It's a completely other discussion because the interception was nullified by the hold before it. But still, I hated that moment of the game. I'm like, come on.
And it happened, I think it was a couple plays after Anzalone just missed the interception.
Yep. 248-539-9797. We will get to the college teams a little bit later here.
I hate that rule too, guys. Just real quick, because it didn't matter because it got nullified by the holding, like you guys said. Yep. But if you're going to, just specifically on that rule, if you can't hit the quarter, just make him not be able to part of the play anymore. As soon as the quarterback throws the interception, he is not even a person on the field.
You have a red jersey.
Because otherwise, let's say it's Lamar Jackson and he's 25 yards away from the guy, so he's not close and you can't block him. That guy's fast enough to chase him down if he wanted to. So what? You have to wait till he gets within distance before you can block him? Just make him not part of the game then if you want to protect the quarterbacks. I hated it.
I think that is a fair compromise. If you want to protect the quarterbacks, when a quarterback throws an interception, that quarterback is...
he's done.
He's done. The play is over for him.
But if it's Jared Goff, he can get destroyed in a playoff game.
Oh, right, right. Exactly.
Right.
Right. Right. Which is, oh, my God.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
I'm sorry. You didn't think about that?
No, I didn't. I didn't, and I should have, because I totally remember Jared Goff getting ear-holed.
He was concussed.
And silly for a play had to come out. Right. Yeah, now I'm pissed.
Yeah.
This is something to talk to Jared about tomorrow. Hey, I'm going to flashback a few months. Remember this?
248-539-9797. Jay is in Detroit and next. Hi, Jay.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today? I know it's a long day for Big Blue.
Wasn't great.
No, it wasn't great. I wanted to do my champ and chump, but before I did, I wanted to thank the godfather of radio, Mr. Michael Stone, and the hammer last night for allowing me on the air, and after the worst call he's ever taken in his life. So that was very nice. Thank you, Michael. And but my champ of the weekend, I thought, was Aiden Childs in Michigan State. It was the best game of the weekend, the most competitive game of the weekend in double overtime. And the chump of the weekend, I have to say, is Big Blue. Bad weekend. They got beat by Oklahoma, and then Graham Glasgow proved he is no Frank Ragnow. And Hutch did not look good. He did not look like he was the player he was before he got hurt.
Thank you for the phone call, Jay. The Glasgow thing is going to be interesting moving forward, and whether or not he can be the answer at center. I like Hank Fraley a lot, the O-line coach. And he is still here, so to me, that's a sign of encouragement. Give this guy a problem, Hank Fraley, you're on the job, fix it. And I don't know if there's anybody better in terms of that, so that gives me some hope there. As far as, you know, the defense, there's some open-ended questions about the defense. And, you know, Gator, right now I'd say that they are on the Russian front. Let's see how they respond.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, you know, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Dan Campbell, 248-539-9797. We happy to have him in charge still? Like, aren't we happy to still have him in charge?
I am.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not happy with the game yesterday.
Of course not.
But I don't think that's indicative of how I expect the Lions to play this year. I'm not blowing it off either.
No.
That's a bad loss.
It's a data point.
It's a bad loss. It's a bad look. And what makes it a really bad loss, it's to one of your division rivals. And it's to a team that you know is going to be competitive. They're the favorite to win the division. They made their big move to get Micah Parsons. He didn't play all that much last night, but he made an impact in the few plays that he played for sure. You know, when he gets his one quarterback sack, Jared Goff running free from the pocket, but, you know, Goff and his 5'4 speed is no match for Parsons and his 4'4 speed.
Yeah.
So, whatever. I don't care so much about that. I care that they just didn't show up in the first half in any aspect of the game. The lone touchdown they got was, I mean, an unbelievable catch from Isaac Tesla, his first ever catch in the National Football League. It's a touchdown, and it might be the greatest catch I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating about that. It was that good of a catch, and unfortunately it doesn't even matter in the grand scheme of things. If I want to look for silver linings and clouds, which I kind of do want to do that today, now that we're an hour or two.
This is going to be interesting because I'm not sure what to do with that. The run defense?
It's the run defense, and it's also the way that they played in the second half as a defense. I mentioned earlier, 93 yards given up in the second half. They gave up a touchdown drive, but it was a 36-yard drive that was after, you know, the offense left them at the half-yard line to go ahead and punt the ball. Mm-hmm. So I'm not killing the defense in the second half. I thought they played better. Was it winning football the way that they played in the second half? Well, I don't know. The defensively may have been, but they still didn't get any pass rush. There's obvious things that they have to work on. I'm concerned about that. There was no rush. Something else I noticed in the first half of the game when it was really prevalent, there was no pass rush when they were throwing the ball a lot and completing everything, Green Bay was. There were at least three plays that I saw where the edge rusher ends up going back into coverage. Now, I know they've done that throughout the years, and that's part of it. But I really wanted to see Aiden Hutchinson pin his ears back and go after the quarterback, and I'm seeing him drop back into coverage. And, you know, on plays, we're not getting any pass rush to begin with anyway. And then Davenport did it as well. And they're not getting a pass rush enough where you can afford to drop a guy back, I guess, in my mind. Maybe I'm overlooking at things, but that was just something that stood out to me, is that they're not getting any pass rush, and then they're taking away their best pass rushers to put them into coverage.
Can I vent for a moment
about
something?
Yeah.
Because there was something that irritated the crap out of me. So the game's going poorly, and when it's going poorly, things start to bother you. But the Lions get the football back down 24-6 with 7 minutes and 50 something seconds to go. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, hurry up. And Tony Romo says,
please vent.
I would have started that earlier.
I thought,
would you have, Tony? Because the last drive started on their own 8. Okay. It started on their own 8. And the first play, Goff got sacked back to the half yard line. So let me be clear here. That was the first play of the drive. You would have gone hurry up from your half-yard line after getting sacked inside. You would have gone hurry up then. When now, everything changes. And oh, by the way, when that drive started, They might have been going hurry up until Goff got sacked back to his own half-yard line. Now the goal changes just to try and get out of the shadows of your own goalpost, but you would have gone hurry up. And I was like, no, you wouldn't have. That is one of the most, I was like, come on. But Romo, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was probably more of a product of them losing the way they were losing that I was irritated so much by that. But when he said that, I was like, okay, so I'm assuming you meant the previous drive you would have done it when the first play they were backed up to their own half-yard line. Got it.
Well, if it makes you feel better, like, I was with you. Okay. As soon as I heard him say that, I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Really? Is that what you would have done?
Mm-hmm. Because also the previous drive, well, whatever. 248-539-9797. All right, let's get back to your phone calls. Bob in Shelby. Hi, Bob.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the jump obviously was the game, right? The thing of it was, in front of national TV, the Packers laid down the blueprint on how to beat the Lions. I think we all knew this as Lions fans. If you can pressure the Lions, they don't get out of the gate and they can't utilize their weapons. And that, I think, it was showcased, you know. The good news is it's only the first game, so time will tell. But I think, you know, the progress of the offensive line is going to play a big role in how far we're going to go towards, you know, 11-6, 12-5 versus 9-8 this year.
There's no question. And I mean, that's a huge, yeah, huge deal moving forward. I'm glad Fraley's a line coach, but that doesn't mean it's a punch button. He's going to get it done. He's got to prove it. He's got to prove it.
People are watching. And, yep, and the other thing that I had, Tesla, you know, he made the circus catch, but I guess he wasn't feeling well or whatnot, but where was he? How many plays did he actually play yesterday? Was that the only one? I don't know.
No, he was out there, but not a ton. Isaac Tesla played 3 offensive snaps.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And lastly, I think Tony Romo's parents should have practiced Planned Parenthood.
Wow, I won't go that far.
Easy. Jeez, slow down.
Man. Doug invited this.
He's not a bad human being. I just didn't like the
comments. Is that my fault, Kang?
Yeah, I usually don't criticize.
I usually don't, but in that moment,
you took the loss hard.
Well, it was like I said, it was a combination of frustration over the game, and then him giving this "I know it all, I told you so." I would have started this earlier, and I'm like, so you would have gone hurry up after a 7-yard sack back to your own half yard line instead of saying, "Okay, we need to calm down and get the hell out of the shadows of our own goalposts."
I'd like to nip this one in the bud too, Isaac Tesla. Yeah. Fantastic catch, yeah. Awesome, love to see it. He could have played 50 plays on offense and it wouldn't have made a difference because they just didn't have time to throw anything downfield. Everything was short because of the lack of protection.
When you get down to X's and O's, and this is going to be one of the questions that I have for Jared Goff tomorrow, is what did they do downfield that you saw? Because even when he had time, there was very little downfield passing attack. And that to me I was surprised by that. I think they did a really good job in the secondary. It might be a Lions look in the mirror moment. It might be something that the Packers did, but that's one of my questions for Mr. Goff tomorrow. 248-539-9797. Rob is next. What's up, Rob?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to give my champ and chump.
Yep.
Sorry, I switched to my phone. My chump, Lions defense. I mean, I know that they played good in the second half, but they had 3 opportunities to make game-changing plays, and they failed. I think that's huge. Anzalone, wish he would have caught that ball, and then just stupid mistakes by Branch and caused a touchdown. And then my champ is my daughter's boyfriend for Sparta, Michigan. He had a great game. The 6th best game since 2011 in Michigan. He threw for 418 yards. Whoa. He 3 passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown for Sparta.
That's awesome.
Nice.
What's the kid's name?
Yeah. Warren Gebhardt. And that's the same school that a former Piston, Lindsey Hunter, is going to become the head coach of for the basketball team.
Wow.
Kind of cool little thing going on, but.
Yeah. Cool.
Yep, those are my champ and chump.
Thank you very much, Rob. Appreciate it. 248-539-9797. More of your phone calls and feedback coming up. We will get to the college teams in the noon hour. 97.1 The Ticket.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stan Campbell sounds like he's not giving up on the season either. 248-539-9797. Get your champ and chump votes in. Look, it was disturbing. There's no question about that. We talked about over the last couple of weeks, boy, if they lose this Green Bay game, it's going to be a full-on panic Monday. And then I felt like they checked every box to say everything you were afraid of.
Right.
It all happened. And I think we all had different levels of concern about different areas of the team. My biggest concern was the interior of the offensive line. Figure the coordinators, a concern, but I was more just about the Jimmys and Joes than the X's and O's. The pass rush, I wasn't very concerned about because they were getting Hutch back, and I think of how it was last year when they didn't have Davenport opposite of Hutch, and still had a decent pass rush until Hutch got hurt. Jordan Love had a lot of time yesterday. So,
sure did.
I mean, I don't even know what other the other fears were, but if the big ones were coordinators, interior of the O-line, and the pass rush, all of them just feed into why people were concerned. All of them.
Yeah, I wasn't terribly concerned about the coordinators. And even after yesterday, I'm still not. That doesn't really concern me. The interior of the offensive line concerns me in terms of how long it's going to take before they feel good enough about that, or before I feel, I guess, whatever that matters. But it's, you know, they have to be, in my eyes, I want them to see them be a competent unit, being able to get the push, protect the quarterback from within, and open up holes in the running game. And there were no holes in the running game. None. And when you have 16 of the 22 rushing plays that were called end up with your running back getting hit behind the line of scrimmage. 16 out of 22, that's an alarming rate in my mind. So that's a problem. It's a work in progress. I have full confidence that Tate Ratledge is going to be good. I don't know yet about Mahogany. I was hopeful that we'd at least get perhaps average play from Graham Glasgow. It's one game. All three of the guys look like they struggled. So That's the part of a group that can play well together. They just have to get better. They have to. If they don't, then the season is going to be sunk because the schedule's too hard. You play too many good defenses where that's going to be a problem. So they have to get better. They have no choice. And if it's simply missed assignments, I'm okay with it because it's one game, yuck, throw it in the garbage if it's missed assignments. If it's because you lack the talent, then that's a problem. I don't think it's that necessarily. I'm leaving it open. It could be, but I think it's more just missed assignments, and they're going to have to get better at that, tighten stuff up. And as Jared Goff said after the game yesterday, he's going to have to be the guy that leads the way in making sure that they're aligned properly.
See, the thing is, if it's missed assignments or miscommunication, I have a problem because they've known Green Bay was week one since the schedule came out, which is a long time ago, right? And then when the Micah Parsons trade happened, they were ecstatic that Kenny Clark wasn't going to be in the middle of that defense. So the plan probably was a lot run the ball all week. Johnny Moore and the offensive coordinator is responsible for that. And how could they still have this miscommunication? That's what bothers me. Now, I'm hoping, just like you said, it's a one-week thing. They're going to learn, move on. But they had all this time to get ready for this game without Kenny Clark in the middle, and they still were unable to do anything to protect or run the ball. It just looks so bad, man.
Keith in the UP, you're next. Keith. We'll get back to Keith. Spencer is next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Spencer.
How you doing, fellas?
All right.
Hey, so I think it was is basically the tail of the tape. If you look at how many receptions that Gibbs and Montgomery had, it was 14 out of 31 receptions. So we were doing check down after check down. It's hard to get the yards that you need to win a football game when you're doing check down after check down. Now, the bright side of things, it's first game. It's hard to scheme against offenses and defenses when you don't have film from the season and know where their weaknesses are. But we got to get better.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. That was a disturbing performance. And, yeah, that's why I'm interested to talk to Goff about, even when he did have time, what did he see downfield? Because Goff makes good decisions with the football for the most part. He has been extraordinarily effective, and they couldn't get much going downfield. What is it? I believe that was an NFL record for most catches with the fewest number of yards by a player. 10 catches for 31 yards is an incredible statistic that Jahmyr Gibbs had.
Yeah, we were about 3.5 yards less per reception than Green Bay was.
Not good.
Overall in the game. Not good.
Not good.
No. Look, I mean, it's not like it was a great total for the Packers. I mean, averaging 12 yards a reception, under 12 yards a reception. The Packers had, less than 300 yards in offense, too. Neither offense was great. Packers looked so good in the first half and then did nothing in the second half. They did very little in the second half. They had the one drive, went 36 yards, and scored a touchdown. Beyond that, they struggled. They got three and outs. The Lions were able to get three and outs. But the Lions' offense all day long was just at a snail's pace. They drove the ball. They had 16 plays in one drive, and you end up with a field goal. That's demoralizing. For a team like this that was able to put up 33 points a game last year, to not finish has to be frustrating to those guys because they know they can finish, and yet they didn't. They couldn't finish yesterday. The only way they finished was on a miraculous catch late in the game.
We go to Brian next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hello, Brian.
Hello, gentlemen. How y'all doing today?
All right.
Okay, I have a question to ask both of you guys. Everybody always rag on Brad, what he's not doing, the players he's not getting. But don't Dan have the same responsibility going to this office and say, hey, man, I want to get this guy here. This guy can help us. Because I'm thinking the head coach is just as responsible as Brad is. I mean, he always the one, always people, he's not doing this, he's not there, he's not picking up free agents, he's not doing this. With the money, $40 million under cap or cap money to spend, I would think that Dan should be going in and saying something to Brad. Hey, man, I need some guys.
Well, I mean, it's everything. They talk about how they're very collaborative. So, I think that Dan is probably giving his two cents on what they have and what they don't have. Something very interesting that happened over the weekend is they signed Jameson Williams to that contract, and there was a report that they thought they were going to sign Hutch. Is that correct?
Well, I guess they kept showing the crawl that they could not get a deal done with Hutchinson before the season began.
Okay, Don, does that mean that they were trying to get a deal done
Sounds
with Hutchinson?
Like it.
Okay, well, you know what that tells me? That tells me potentially a lot of this current cap space was earmarked for J-Mo and Hutch. If they get a deal done with Hutch, does that mean they move on and say, okay, we need to be a little bit more aggressive on getting players at the trade deadline because – hey, if we couldn't get a deal done with Hutch, we're going to have to wait till next offseason. What rental out there can we get? And right now, everybody, it feels like the number one issue people have was edge rusher. And I think the number one issue might be interior O-line, a veteran that can get the job done.
Well, I do think it's interesting that they committed to Jameson Williams as much as they did. I did not see that one coming. So when I'm watching TV beforehand and this comes across the crawl that they signed to a 3-year, $83 million extension, I had a couple of thoughts. First was, they got him for what's going to be less than market value. Because if he has the year I think he's going to have, had he gone into free agency a year from now, or a year and a half from now, whenever it would have been, he would have been a $30 million a year player. Instead, they got him at a less expensive number, but they're going to have to start paying him sooner than that. So I was kind of like eyes wide open. I did not expect that.
It's a risk. You're investing in a player and hoping to mitigate the cost by doing so now to keep the cost down a little bit.
And then to see the game unfold, and it's one game, and I'm not going to make a big deal out of one game, but you know, Hutchinson was a non-factor in the game yesterday for the Lions defense. That doesn't go well for the crowd that was very concerned about him coming into the season, despite the head coach saying, don't worry about it. He looks better than we've ever seen him look. He looks is the best Hutch we've ever seen. You know, is this going to start to be more more things that come out of Dan Campbell's mouth? Is it going to be looked at as his coach speak, or is it going to be looked at more as the gospel? It used to be the gospel. Now is it kind of, you know, this is 2 years in a row. You had the Anzarike stuff last year of what he had to say about him. He really wasn't a big factor. And now this year it's Hutch is the best we've ever seen. You know, I mean, it's just words. I get that. But at the same time, Hutchinson didn't look like his old self.
Doug Harsh, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. A completely different front. Kang, I want you to make note of this. Interesting development. You know the saying, meet them where they are? Have you ever heard that? Meet them where they are?
Sure.
One of my kids said, Dad, you need to get Snapchat. And I'm like, I don't need to get Snapchat. But I said, all right. So I got Snapchat this weekend. They have communicated with me more in the last 48 hours than they have. And it feels like forever.
Really? So they told you to get it so they can message you more?
Apparently. The texting, like, okay. So texting old and busted, Snapchat, the new hotness. Maybe it's not new. But I'm impressed with the level of communication. Now, maybe the curiosity factor will wear off. But Kang, just be aware of this. Meet them where they are. If they're communicating via Snapchat.
I feel like there's something behind this.
There might
man.
Be. There this, might I, be. You know, my the early returns.
Dad's getting set up.
Yeah.
The early returns are good.
What's the appeal of Snapchat?
I don't know.
Yeah, Doug, you're a Snapchat user.
I don't know.
Snapface, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, I have no idea.
What is it, Instabook? What are we doing?
Yeah, so it
but
to
Snapchat's
me,
been around for a bit. Like I thought that it was totally old and busted and done with, and apparently it's made a resurrection here.
Well, maybe it was never old and busted. Or maybe they're communicating on a completely different platform, and they just have, let's park Dad over there at Snapchat. But
yeah, they're telling you use dial-up, too?
No, they haven't done that.
Okay. That's going away.
Anyway, I'm intrigued.
They stopped going to your MySpace page?
I'm encouraged by the early returns. But Kang, make note of it. Make note of it with kids, young kids. Meet them where they are. Who knows what it'll be by the time your kids get devices.
I don't even want to think about that. Seriously.
248-539-9797. Okay, look. We'll get to the college teams next hour. Obviously, what happened yesterday is top of everybody's mind. And, you know, I mean, there's various reaction to from it's one game to they're doomed. I'm more in the it's one game camp. I think that there's a lot of smart people that have been here running this team for a long time that I give them the opportunity here to fix this. And like the people that, you know, we've played some Dan Campbell sound bites, and I feel like I'm glad he's in charge. I'm glad Dan Campbell's in charge, and I have faith in Dan Campbell, and that doesn't change after this game. Does this count as back-to-back losses, by the way, the Washington game last year and this game this year? I guess it kind of does. No, it doesn't?
No.
He's been really good after losses, and they haven't played an uncompetitive game in a couple of years. The last uncompetitive game was that Baltimore game back in, I think it was October of 2023, and that team played for the NFC Championship.
Yeah, so, there's a couple that stand out. That's definitely one of them. That was it Carolina the same season where they just were completely non-competitive? They may have been the previous year. Mm-hmm. There was a game where the field was so cold in Carolina. It was awful field conditions, but whatever. They smoked them by like 40 points. That was the other one that comes to mind. But this one's the Baltimore game is relevant because Baltimore's that's a Super Bowl contending team. And everybody thinks that Green Bay is a Super Bowl contending team, and they did nothing to dissuade you from that by watching the game yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So, I the relevance is there with that. Hopefully they can bounce back like they did from the Baltimore game.
248-539-9797. Let's go to Sammy next on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Sammy.
Hey, nah. What's up, guys?
How are you, sir?
So, I'm good. So, look, I don't want to keep kicking this dead horse because everyone's called and complained and just miserable. So my question to you guys is, you know, when I saw the schedule when it came out months ago, I looked at it and I'm like, I think maybe we could probably do 12 wins this year. Now, after this game, is your win total what you initially thought was possible? Has that changed?
No.
Not at all?
Nope.
No, not me either.
Okay. I mean, look, I mean, for me, it kind of has, you know. I mean, it's really hard to win all six games in your division, and I kind of thought that wouldn't happen again. But, like, I'm a little nervous that maybe 10 wins is our ceiling.
Sammy, here's what you got to do. When you make a prediction before the season, you stand by it. One game shouldn't dissuade you, and certainly not the first game of the season shouldn't dissuade you.
I know,
if you have to look at it halfway through the season, well, listen, I'm telling you, man, just stand by it. You know, the team gets better as the season goes on, and if halfway through the year, if they are, you know, 4-5 at that point, then you can say, okay, things aren't going the way we had planned. This is not where I thought they would be. And if that takes you out of where your prediction was, then you look at it that way. Don't get caught up in the one game thing. It's a terrible game.
What did you guys predict was possible?
11-6.
Curious. I think we both had 11-6.
Okay.
Yeah. The truth is, there's always a degree of unpredictability, but and maybe Sammy can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
In my role, I feel like if I change the prediction after the outcome of every game, what kind of credibility do I have? So I'm going to plant the flag and stubbornly stand next to it at 11-6. Seasons are long. Lots happens. And, you know, so I'll stand by it. 11-6. You were 11-6, Kang, weren't you? You were 12-5.
Yeah, I want to move off of it.
So do we do the – I don't know if we ever revealed what the people said last week.
We didn't do the average of what they did, and we can do that today. And I'm intrigued to see how much – I mean, so fans, look, you can do whatever you want. I just feel like I'm gonna stand by it. I feel like I'm going to stand by it because – you know, otherwise, you can't.
I think everybody has to stand by. You're either right or you're wrong.
Yeah, it's okay to own the L, but changing your prediction after every game.
Then there's no credibility.
No. 248-539-9797. Jim in Washington Township, you're next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, great show, guys.
What's up?
Can you help me understand one thing? Actually, two. So when the Lions were bad a couple years ago and they had to lead on somebody, they always played prevent defense. And they'd always get beat because they couldn't put no pressure on a quarterback. So when Glenn got here, he changed all that, and he was all about rushing the quarterback. And then yesterday, they're taking these defensive linemen and dropping them, and if they rush a safety, I don't get that.
Well, it's supposed to fool a quarterback. It's supposed to disguise coverages.
But they rush three people, and a quarterback has all day to throw the ball.
How many times did they rush three people?
It seems like every time they drop a D lineman, they'd only rush three, unless they'd rush a safety in a spot, which doesn't make sense.
I guess one of the
22 pass plays, I would imagine it was probably a couple,
yeah,
where they only rushed three guys. Because if they dropped the edge rusher back into coverage, it usually meant that a linebacker would come up and enter the fray as a pass rusher.
Yeah, but why switch those guys out?
Well, if you do the same thing every time, you become predictable. But I would suspect that it wasn't as much as you think it was. I'd have to go back and watch the game and see how many times they, quote, rush three people. I don't remember seeing a lot of three-man rushes. in this game.
I don't see a lot of three-man rushes, but I do remember seeing several times that you saw the edge rushers go back into coverage.
What was far more disturbing than that was when they brought extra pass rushers, it didn't help. There were some of those third down plays early. In fact, the first one where Jordan Love found Wicks on a third and 10, they brought an extra pass rusher, didn't help. And then they had a 3rd and 6. He found Matthew Golden. They brought an extra pass rusher there, and it didn't help. And when your blitz is ineffective, that's a problem. But hey, look, it was a lot of this was yuck, throw it in the garbage. There was kind of the Tesla catch in the run defense, and then after that, yuck, throw it in the garbage. It couldn't have gone much worse. This does happen. It can happen to a good team. The problem is we have no evidence that the 2025 team is going to be exceptionally good. We have one data point, and it was awful.
Yeah, and one of the other few bright points was the St. Brown catch on the sideline.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Yep.
Only to be outdone by Tesla with a touchdown.
248-539-9797. It is Carson Anderson on a Monday. Get your champ and chump votes in, 97.1.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.